What's up, y'all? Welcome to the Sports Medicine Broadcast, episode 118, Athletic Training Outreach Programs with Mike Stevenson and Brad Brown, recorded November 12th, 2014. You already heard our guests are Brad Brown, the former athletic trainer for the Houston Oilers, then turned Tennessee Titan, and now he is head of the Memorial Hermann Sports Medicine, Ironman Sports Medicine. Can you say that for me, Brad?
It's actually, I'm the director of athletic training outreach for Ironman Sports Medicine, our Memorial Hermann Sports Medicine.
All right, good, because, yeah, I want to mess that up. All right, and then Michael Stevenson has joined us before, probably, I think, about 2 years ago, talking about some of the ways they collaborate on coverage. And Mike, why don't you go ahead and give us who you are?
Yeah, my official title is program manager for Huntsville Hospital Sports Center here in Huntsville, Alabama.
All right. So both of them are in charge of running athletic training outreach programs. And so since they are the experts, they'll be doing most of the talking. Of course, I'm your host. Most of the sports medicine kids are gone because we're doing this at a later time than normal. They helped me get it started, and then they're pretty much taken off. But you, like I just said, we got Mike Stevenson from Huntsville, Alabama, and Brad Brown from Houston, Texas. All right, if you want to join the conversation, sportsmedicinebroadcast.com, using hashtag TheSMB on Twitter. Hopefully I'll be able to see that. Ustream social feature, Bernice is not there to look at that, so don't expect to answer. And then link to all that stuff. So again, I'm doing this solo, so I won't be able to do all the other stuff, but hopefully the conversation will go well. Without much further ado, Brad, you already mentioned a little bit about your title. Tell me a little bit more about who you are and what you do.
Well, I'll start out with the outreach program director is relatively new for me. As you said, I spent the last 30 years, 29 years in the NFL as an athletic trainer. Spent 2 years as an assistant with the Denver Broncos, and then 27 years with the Houston Oilers, Tennessee Titans. So my background really comes from professional football. You know, kind of how I got into the outreach program was when I left the NFL. Position, you know, was brought to me, and it's certainly a different position than I had, you know, in the NFL as a head trainer. But it's one that, you know, I've enjoyed, you know, kind of figuring out all the ins and outs of it and how it works, and the outreach part of it, and kind of seeing where we go with it and how this works. So I'll be very interested to listen to Mike and see how he's done all this over the years. And as I said, I'm still kind of learning the ropes here. But that's kind of my background. You know, I've been an athletic trainer a long time. I'm got about 35 years in the business. So a lot of it's just my experience and what I've been through and done.
That'll work. So, I mean, you've led, as a head athletic trainer, you've led teams there through the NFL. You know, I'm sure you've been through several different athletic trainers and interns and all that stuff. So it's not like you're just completely a rookie at leading people. So
I think that's why it was probably attractive to me. And, you know, some of the skills that you learn from that level, especially when you're, you know, as a head guy, you have to, you know, you do have to delegate. You have to, you know, supervise a lot of people in the role throughout the, you know, throughout all those years. And I did start in a small college. So I've worked with student trainers before, and worked as an athletic trainer by myself for really about 16, 17 intercollegiate men and women sports. So, you know, my background was I started in a small school and worked my way up through that system. So I feel like I have a little bit of a background in there. I've never really worked in the high school setting or actually major college setting. But, you know, I have a funny philosophy on athletic training. Athletic training, it really doesn't matter where you're at. The problems are still very similar. The people that you deal with may be different, but the athletic injuries that we see are very similar at any level that you're at.
I agree. All right, Mike, go ahead and tell us who you are, a little bit about your background.
Well, I've about the time Brad was getting started, probably with his first job, I think I was being born. So I've been certified about 10 years. I started in a different major and changed to athletic training and got certified in 04 and got a job here at Huntsville Hospital covering an arena football team and hockey team. And then that kind of transitioned into a real small college outreach that we do here. We cover Alabama A&M University, which is in the SWAC. I started covering men's basketball there. I was there 2 years, went back to school and got my master's, then came back and started at the high school level when I came back. And about 3 years ago, this administrative position opened up, and it's different. It's a challenge. I manage a group, counting myself and all of our staff, full-time, part-time, PRN. and our intern GA athletic trainers that we have at Alabama A&M, counting myself, we have 30 athletic trainers here on our staff. So quite a lot of people, really big service area. We cover about three different counties here in North Alabama. So it's a big service area. It's a lot of foot time for me. Brad's right. It's athletic training is athletic training. I teach a sports medicine class at a small private high school here. Now I started doing that again this fall. And I tell those kids in class, you know, athletes are athletes. It doesn't matter if they're 2A, 3A, college, professional guys. They're really the problems, the attitudes, the demeanors are all pretty similar. The injuries are pretty similar. It's just how good are you an athletic trainer? How well do you use your resources and how well do you fit the system you're in? So, it's a lot of different things. It's leading people, it's relationships, it's, understanding situational politics and communities and personalities. It's a lot of different things that have nothing to do with athletic training, but they fit into athletic training. So, it's different. It's unique. It's a unique job.
So what I'm hearing you say is that the program director should be teaching sports medicine. Come, all right, Brad.
No, I don't know. You know, I think all of us are probably, as far as teaching is concerned, I love teaching and being around kids. I haven't done it for a long time because I haven't been in the system, but I always enjoyed teaching. I think it's always fun to, you know, get with students and kind of share some things with them and teach and have them learn. You know, to kind of go back to our program, we're a little different probably. Our system is set up a little bit different. It's kind of a unique system in the sense that we have several different aspects to it. Our outreach program is kind of based on, we've got six athletic trainers are span kind of all over the city of Houston. Kind of each corner of the city, we have someone that's kind of the key person in that area. They go out and visit our schools. We have several schools that we're aligned with, school districts that we work with as Pasadena here. And our outreach guys, are their main job is to go out and kind of service those clients and those schools. We try to work closely with those schools and helping them get people back into the system and working into our hospitals and our doctors and try to get our doctors to help cover those places. And that's kind of what our outreach is from that standpoint. So those guys aren't really in an athletic training setting or a training room every day either. They visit a lot of schools and they you know, try to drive this system from that standpoint. The other side of our system is we will go into and have a number of actually private schools that we have formed relationships with where we will place an athletic trainer into their school, help them with the athletic training services and make it available to them. So we've got probably 9 or 10 athletic trainers in that setting as well. And all those people will kind of fit under my direction, and I kind of keep track of a lot of those different people and try to troubleshoot and help them, as Mike probably knows it. You know, there's always things that come up that every day, every morning, you kind of look at your calendar and see what you got, and then you start looking at your emails and think, oh, now I got to take care of this one. And you spend half your day probably just, you know, going through those battles. And I think as an outreach program, and, you know, as Mike probably will agree with you here, is that, you know, you're always looking at where you can service the community and where you can help them. I think it's interesting, athletic training, you know, when I first came into it, you know, it was one of those things where I think you felt like, well, wow, what are we going to be able to do and how much can we do? And you know, are we always going to find business? But I think what you find is it's not hard to find business. I think it's out there and it's interesting. I think we're in a unique environment in the state of Texas, has had a long history of athletic trainers and high school settings and so on and so forth. So I think what you're seeing is there, the need is there. They see the need, people appreciate the need. And so therefore it's expanding all the time and it can go a lot of different directions into clubs, kids clubs, adult clubs, your club sports, hockey, lacrosse, anything that you're getting into there from that standpoint. So it's kind of an open-ended where it can go. I think it's from a resource standpoint, what we find probably from a hospital and from our group is, you know, what do you decide is the, your target audience and where do you go with it? And I think it's not probably so much what that we can't find business. It's really more what your coverage can be and what your capabilities are as far as covering all those different areas.
Yeah. Hit the nail on the head.
So Brad, I think I heard you say there was about 19. Do you have about 19 athletic trainers working for you?
I think that's right. You know, I'd have to, I haven't really sat down and counted them all up, but we've probably got, I'm going to say 8 to 10 now in schools. And then we've got our core group that works out into the, out in the community. So we're probably getting close to 20 guys, all 20 right. girls and guys.
And then Mike, you said you have about 30.
Yeah. Counting myself, we've got 30.
All right. So, and Brad told us a lot about the areas that they're working. And I know you said you cover, what, 6 counties? Is that what you said, 3 counties?
We cover 3 counties, and it's different. You know, I mean, it's, you know, where it's a major metropolitan area in Houston, for Brad, for us, it's much more rural. You know, we're Huntsville, Madison County, and Madison City area. The population here is only, I think, about 200,000, maybe 300,000 total. But we cover 17 different schools, high schools in the 3 county area that we're in. We have some agreements and some setups with school districts. Madison City Schools has 2 middle schools and 2 high schools. We provide 5 athletic trainers for that school system, 2 for each high school, and then 1 to split between the middle schools. And then the other systems, you know, we have some competition in the area, some other groups that do provide sports medicine services, athletic trainers to the schools. So in those systems where 1 or 2 of those schools utilize a different provider, we kind of attack it where we have agreements with the individual schools in those systems, and we tell them what we'll provide them and what they provide us in return. And Brad, you know, I don't know how Memorial Hermann is set up. I'm sure Brad can attest to it a little differently if it's a different setup. Huntsville Hospital is a nonprofit hospital. So we really advertise and sell our program as a community service. You know, our guys, it's 30 people that are provided to the community, to that service area at no charge to those people. You know, it's essentially free healthcare, you know, and I tell our athletic trainers their number one job is to be an athletic trainer. You know, I want them to prevent and to assess and to rehabilitate and where it's possible, try to drive those patients and those folks back to the hospital system. But you know, we lose some, and that's okay. It's just, you know, it's a unique service. It's a unique setup. It's really hard to describe. You know, it's hard to talk about and really nail down in an hour show, Jeremy. And it's, we've had folks come in and look at our model and see how they can sustain it in their area. And it's difficult. You know, it's difficult in these economic times to provide healthcare for free. So that's what we're battling, and we're trying to kind of stave off contraction and continue to provide a quality service and cover as many things as we can. We've got 17 high schools, 6 middle schools that we care for, and then about a dozen or so club sports. So
any time if you have a comment, we also have Bill Hale and Randy sure. Dugas joining us. So if you have guys questions or comments, then you
can interrupt me anytime.
All right. So you briefly talked about some of the challenges you face there, Mike, as far as trying to provide free healthcare. And yeah. then, Brad, you mentioned that there seems to be no shortage of business because there's always sports. Can you talk a little bit more, Mike, about some of the other challenges you might face?
I mean, you know, when you're in a competitive market, and I don't know if Memorial Hermann has competition in that market or not, Brad could probably talk about it, but you know, you start to you try to battle what we're giving away for free, and folks will try to, you know, the competitors, and it's no knock on them, that's just business, but they, you know, they come in and make a different offer, and you know, sometimes are misled, saying we'll give you certain things, and it's brand loyalty, and that starts. The brand loyalty we have with the Huntsville Hospital Systems is something I tell our staff. They are individually responsible for that. You know, if we have an athletic trainer in one school that's not very good at what they do, it hurts our program. It hurts us all over. So that's a challenge. You know, dealing with different. Every school is different. You know, every school has its own unique personality. Is what I like to tell people. You know, the kids are different. The parents are different. It's different challenges financially, economically, socially at every school. And when you pick a staff member and you interview people, I've had people that we've turned away or not offered a job, a position to, not because they're not good athletic trainers, but just because they're not the right fit for that school. And that's hard. It's hard to stomach that sometimes, because there's been times where I've turned people away thinking, you know, oh man, that person would be great at this school, but we don't have an opening there. So we're hiring for a school, and each school has different challenges, and it's a different setup, different amounts of respect and love and attention are shown to our staff and to the athletes at each different school. So it's, you know, the challenges we could go on all day, and they're really innumerable. A lot of challenges, difficult environment, but that's, you know, I mean, I tell people I don't do a lot of real hardcore athletic training anymore, that it's more administrative, but in the administrative part, all of those challenges, that's athletic training. It's about dealing with something different every day and kind of getting thrown into the fire and, you know, trying to MacGyver your way out of it with the least amount of hurdles possible, you know, do it in the best way possible, do no harm, do the best job you can, and provide quality care, and try to keep a good attitude through the whole thing.
Yeah, I agree. I think that, you know, we talk about the competition in athletic training. I think probably one of the best things from a standpoint of our, you know, from the Houston area is the medical community here is huge. It's a huge market. There's a lot of entities. There's a lot of different people in the market. But I guess in the long run, you know, even though we're competing against each other, the bottom line is we're probably really extending care out to a lot of different places that may not have it. And that's to me is hitting areas that I think is probably unique in that, as I said, the Texas market is a little different, and it's got a huge history with athletic training in the schools and the high schools. And I think what we're seeing now, and one of the areas that we're really kind of looking at and seeing across the board with our outreach athletic training programs and a lot of the coverages that we're helping with is that people are understanding the necessity or the benefits of an athletic trainer. And so you're seeing school systems expanding out what they want covered. In other words, now, and you know, I think when we all started this business years ago, the emphasis was probably with your high schools and your high school football. And now I think you're seeing this is trickling all the way down into your junior highs and you know, your club sports you know, we're placing a lot of people in junior high football right now, and schools see the need for getting, you know, coverage on those things. So I think what's happened is we probably created it ourselves, but it's a great situation in the sense that people now have a respect for the athletic trainers and their needs and the benefits that they bring to a program, and see that it's, you know, it's worth trying to get those people into some of these other sports that we probably haven't been in before.
All right, so did you talk briefly about like some of the competition challenges you guys face?
Yeah, you know, I'll touch up base on it a little bit. You know, as I said, in the Houston market, there's a lot of different entities here, and we all kind of are working on our own spaces. As anything, you know, anytime you get competition, somebody throws it out there, and so now the competition has to say, well, can we match it or step up to that same, you know, scenario? And I think that's something where we're probably always battling. If you're in this business, it's something that's just one of the things that you're always looking at to see, okay, well, you know, can we maintain, or can we do the things that the competition's trying to do, and can we maintain that and do it at the same level they are, or do we need to, you know? I think that's something you're always looking at as to how you approach that. And you know, the sad part of it is there's all kinds of schools, and especially if we look at the Houston market, there's I don't know how many high schools there are here, and you know, how many need athletic trainers, and every school district would probably like to have a great big deal and get a lot of money from a hospital corporation. But you know, the reality of it is they're just like anybody else. They, you know, even though we are technically a nonprofit, you know, that you still have to have that money to operate. And so, you know, you have to pick and choose your battles. And I think everybody's probably in that same boat, you know, and you have to kind of pick the ones that you want to pick and isolate or kind of concentrate on those. And you know, something that I think we're running into, and Mike Price agrees with this, and I think that as we say, business is booming in that we can probably find a lot of business. But I think the same thing, at the same time, you have to kind of look at your staff and say, you know, if we're going to do a good job, we have to kind of limit or watch how involved we get in how many different areas we get into, because, you know, you get yourself so thin, then you can't come and do the things that you promise that you're going to do. So, you know, you got to really look at not only the amount of places that you're going, but the quality of care that you're given and promises that you give, that you want to back that up and do what you're telling them that you're going to do for them. And I think that's kind of an area. It's one of those things that you got to balance that out and figure out, you know, where all that is. And as we keep growing, you know, we have to kind of look at that and say, you know, where are our resources going, and can we balance out what we've got already and continue to grow? And with that, you know, you have to, I mean, it takes personnel, and you have to keep adding people. If you're going to keep continuing to grow, then you're going to have to get people to cover those things. And the ironic part from and Michael probably tell you the same thing. I think something I found with personnel is, you know, you can hire a lot of athletic trainers, but you know, the ironic part of athletic trainers that you kind of run into is we all kind of work the same hours. So our hours are really from, you know, 2:30 in the afternoon until whenever you're done in the evening with your sports. Well, so you can hire somebody and think, well, we got you full time and we can work you here and we can work you there. But, you know, the ironic part of that is your main emphasis is going to be at that period of time in that school that you're working at. And those hours don't vary much from school to school. So it's hard to, you know, take somebody and work in a lot of different areas. It's almost what you find is that you can't, you know, hire an athletic trainer and say, okay, well, we're going to put you 20 hours here and 20 hours there. Well, it's hard to find those 20 hours there because they're so, you know, utilized in that space.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it turns into, you know, when you're part-time at a school or at a system of schools, it turns into the phrase we use is, are we going to provide them a point of contact, or are we going to actually provide them a caregiver? You know, and that's unfortunately kind of, you know, we have schools that come to us and would love for us to provide them an athletic trainer. And the questions we ask are, you know, number one, is it financially feasible for us to do that? Average salary and benefits for one athletic trainer here is about $55,000, you know, and we're non-revenue. So that's if a school comes to us and says, hey, man, we'd love to have you guys give us an athletic trainer full time. Well, you know, we're non-revenue, but are we going to drive any kind of business to our system from that school? And if the answer is not very much, then you have to start questioning, all right, well, do we want to go full time? Do we want to give them somebody just for football? Do we want to try to just give them a point of contact and see how it goes and see if it blossoms or mushrooms into something from that? And that's hard. It's hard to say no to a school. It's hard to say no to a group of individuals. It's hard, a club sport that's asking for help. You know, we kind of, as an athletic training service here, we've kind of fallen victim to our own success. We've driven home the point of you got to have an athletic trainer at your events, and now everybody buys into that, and now everybody asks, can you come cover us, can you cover us, can you cover us? And I tell our staff here, I'm sure Brad feels the same way, I don't take it very lightly when a group comes and asks us for something that's going to need three athletic trainers on a Saturday and Sunday, because somebody's got to cover it, which means somebody's not at home enjoying some downtime when they could be away from their school and away from work. So when we agree to go do that stuff, it's difficult. It's risk reward for your staff. Do you risk burning them out at the price of providing care to a group that really may not need what they think they need? So there's a number of questions and a number of things you have to consider when you take on something new, and it's difficult, but it's a challenge, and it's, you know, I mean, we provide care. I mean, you know, that's what we try to do. That's our MO here, is to try to provide the best care we can for our athletes at our schools.
All right, so we're talking kind of about splitting time. Randy, you do a good bit of stuff with the middle schools, and you're kind of like a part-time athletic trainer for the middle schools, because you'll work their games, and if there's a question, they can come over and see you, or you can go over and see one of their students. Can you talk briefly about, you know, how they were talking about the split time, and how do you feel that affects the schools and the kids there?
As far as splitting my time?
Yeah, like just how they were talking about, you feel like you're either not really there, you can't build the relationship, or that, you know, you're doing them a good service, or just your thoughts on that.
Yeah, I mean, our understanding is that they know that I'm there if they need me. I'm not expected to be at their games or anything like that. I do work like some of the bigger events, like cross country meets. There's a lot of kids there. I'll cover all of those for them. Track meet, whenever they have their playoff, football playoffs at the main stadium, I'll cover that. So they know they have covered. Other than that, they know they're kind of on their own. They take care of their own kids, but if something major happens or some issue comes up that they feel uncomfortable with, they'll let me know and I'll help them with it.
All right. So do you, do you think that, do you feel that they like resent you for not being there, or that they're very grateful?
No, they're appreciative of the help that they get.
Okay.
You know, that's the difficult thing. It's when you run into that resentment, you know, typically that's on an individual basis. You rarely get it from a group, from an administrator, from an athletic director. But you will have coaches at times that will make comments of, oh man, we'd love to have you full time. And that's hard. You know, it's hard to explain to them why you can't be there full time. And it's hard to explain to those parents why you can't be there full time. Cause I'd love the places where we are, where we have athletic trainers that are split between schools. I would love for them to be at that school all the time, all day, every day. But it's not always feasible. You know, it's difficult. You just kind of do the best you can. Like you said, you cover the things you need to be at. You make that decision, and then you give them your phone number and make yourself available the rest of the time. So it's difficult, and I admire our staff members that do it. It's hard. It's in many ways it's more difficult than being at a school full time all day every day.
I think something we're trying, and I shouldn't say we're trying, I think it's been in place for a little bit, but I think something that, you know, we do is basically a free clinic, or we have several clinics around the city. We have some club sports that we do, and part of our agreement is that we'll have an injury clinic for them, or there's one night a week where if they've got a athlete that gets hurt in the club sport, they know that we're going to have one of our athletic trainers at his site. That they can come over or have their kids come over, and we will take a look at them from the standpoint of an athletic trainer, look at them. And then, you know, it goes back to your same old athletic training skills is, you know, we look at them from the athletic trainer side, and then we try to decide, you know, what's the next course of action? What do they need? Do they need to do some rehab? And so we may set them up with some exercise or something to do, or is it something they need to go see the doctor for? And we, you know, so it's a little bit of a triage system, and we'll take a look at them. Doesn't cost them anything to come into the clinic. And then once, you know, we decide what they need is we can maybe see them again the next week if we want to follow up with it and kind of see where they are, or we determine, you know, which direction they need to go. Do they need to go see the doctor? Do they need to probably get an MRI or CT, or, you know, do they need to have a concussion study done, or, I mean, kind of where they need to go with that. So it does offer a service to some of those clubs where we may not have somebody there all the time, but it gives them an outlet or someplace to at least come and get some care, or at least get an opinion on something. And then, then we can kind of lead them in the right direction. And, our part of our business is driving back into the hospital system. So, you know, obviously we try to, you know, recommend one of our doctors and try to get them into our system. But as you said, I mean, you can't dictate where people go. We try to, I think our biggest issue is we try to give them the best care that you can so that, you know, you do get them back. And that's what you're trying to do is prove your worth and make sure that you treat them right and try to get them in as fast as you can and do the things you, and if you do that, I think that is important. And I try to follow up if I see a kid in a clinic, I'll try to follow up the next day or so to make sure that it's what's been done has been done, or what we told them we would try to do for them has been done. And if it hasn't, then we'll try to figure out why it hadn't got done and see if we can correct that and get them back in. But I mean, I think that's important to follow up with your care. And, you know, if you're covering something or doing an injury clinic type thing, then it's important to follow back with the parents and make sure that they got what they needed to get.
Yeah. Yeah. We do that on a little bit smaller scale for some of our club sports, especially for each club sport that we have an agreement with that we provide care for. I assign a different staff member to each one of those clubs and say, you know, all right, Brad, you have Huntsville rugby, and Jeremy, you might have Huntsville football club. And I would go to the administrators for those club sports and say, here's Jeremy. Jeremy is going to be your first port of contact for your parents. You can publish his name, his email address, his cell phone number. Get it out to your parents. And should an injury happen at a practice, or, you know, mom or dad feels like something needs to be evaluated, give Jeremy a call. And Jeremy may not be the one responsible for going to evaluate it, but we'll set up something somewhere. Just give them a point of contact, a way to get them into our system. And then we do exactly what you said, Brad. I mean, you know, you start to use your athletic trainer skills there and you evaluate and figure out what the next step is and take it from there.
All right. So some of the things that you guys were talking about is like selling yourselves to the community. you know, the athletic trainer you hire has to be kind of has to be marketable, personable, be able to communicate, those kind of things. So as you're looking to hire somebody, and I know, Mike, you said it's dependent on the situation or the school or the setting. What are some of the things that you guys are looking for or things that are going to possibly be different for you in a hospital outreach setting than me if I'm looking to hire somebody whenever Bill decides to retire in a couple of years?
it's different. It really depends. I ask, when you interview people, you try to ask questions. You try to get to know them as much as you can in an hour or two that you spend with them. You ask questions about how they handle situations with coaches, and it's different now than it was 10 years ago. The education that they're getting in an undergraduate or graduate program is different now than it was 10 years ago. Some of them come in, some of our new grads, the areas where they really struggle is more of the social aspect of the job. It's dealing with parents, dealing with coaches, understanding that your tone, your presentation, you can't use medical terms 100% of the time. Sometimes you really got to explain it in layman's terms for parents so they understand what's happening. And making sure that the parents understand that you are there to help provide care. And you have to show them that you care. Like Brad said, you got to follow up. You got to follow through with what you say you're going to do. It's hiring now is probably the biggest challenge we face when we have an opening. We have a great staff here, but when we have an opening, hiring the right person is really, really, really critical.
Yeah, I'd say I'd second that. I haven't been in the job long enough to say that I've hired very many people in this position. We have added a couple people into some of our high school settings, and you know, as you said, I think part of that is you got to make sure that everybody's happy. If you're putting them into a school, I think it's important that the last one we put in there actually was able to work at the school a little bit as an independent contractor before we got it hired. The athletic director in the school got to see several of the girls that interviewed for the position. And so therefore, you know, when they started giving us input as to how it worked out, and, you know, it was kind of, they had used some of them. So that was an easy, you know, they got their input on that as well. I think it depends on what positions you're looking for. And you know, in our situation, we've got several different things that we're going into some schools. So we're putting an athletic trainer into a school, and their training set or training skills, you know, they're going to be the athletic trainer in that high school or school that they're going into. So that's a little different setup. And I will say that I think as a general rule, or, you know, as of right now, a lot of those athletic trainers are younger. They're going in, they're kind of starting positions, a lot of these positions. So they're younger. And I think part of our responsibility from an athletic trainer, an older group of athletic trainers, is try to mentor those kids or those young athletic trainers a little bit to help them grow and you know, touch base with them on a regular basis. And if they have issues or concerns that are, or a problem, is that we can help them with it. Because you stop and think about any of us when we first job that we went into, we thought we were really good, but when you really get into it, you realize that, you know, you really don't know very much about it at all. From the practical standpoint, it was easy. You know, you may be smart as a whip, but when you have to go tell a coach something or deal with the situations that come up, you know, that takes some experience. And I think as a somebody that directs that, and as our outreach guys, I think that's part of our responsibility, is that, to help those younger athletic trainers that are getting used to, you know, the system. And you got to, I mean, they got to get in there and do the work and fail and, you know, find out and learn to kind of go through the ropes. But if there's things that we can help them with. So that's one side of our business. And the other side is our outreach group that, you know, that we kind of work in the city part. You're looking for a little different type of an athletic trainer there. That's, you know, our group from that standpoint is an older group of athletic trainers that have been around the city and been around the state. They know a lot of athletic trainers. They know a lot of the people. They know a lot of the school systems. And part of their job is really to keep those relationships. And I think that's much easier for somebody that knows the community much better to be put in that position, opposed to a young athletic trainer that you're putting into a school setting and you're kind of learning from that standpoint. So we have the uniqueness of, you know, kind of having two different entities here. But I think you're right in the sense you have to really look at what you're hiring for in that role as to how you're going to use that person.
Yeah, it's you know, at the schools, at our larger schools, we have two athletic trainers at each school. And it's easier to put a sort of a less experienced athletic trainer in that setting with somebody who is experienced. And something I've done with our group the last couple of years, since we're so large, is I have broken them down into smaller groups. I ask those smaller groups to meet once a month with each other, just to go have lunch, be social, do something like that outside of our mandatory staff meetings. And I ask, you know, I tell them, you need to talk about difficulties in dealing with parents and coaches and give each other help. You know, the older athletic trainers can learn from the younger ones and vice versa. And that's really helped to bring a lot of unity to our staff, the fact that we're starting to show each other that we truly care about our success. And you know, I mean, all the old leadership kind of quote cliches go with that stuff. You know, we're only as good as our worst athletic trainer. And if we all truly really care about the quality of the service we're providing, we can help each other get a lot better. And we've got guys that have been doing this for 20 years, and we've got some folks that have been doing this for, you know, 20 months. And it's different, you know, it's difficult. It's a lot like, you know, me and Brad, you know, we have a similar position. Brad's got a lot more experience than I do. That doesn't mean he's worse at it than I am. It doesn't mean he's better at it than I am. It's just, it's a different perspective. And you know, if Brad and I were to sit down and talk, we could probably teach each other some things. And I really want our staff to understand and grasp that concept as well. You know, and what works at one school may not work at another school based on the limitations of the setup. Coaches, parents, students, administrators, you know, they're all different. So it's a unique – that's and honestly, to me, that's what makes the job my job fun. I've told our lead ATC here before, it truly is like putting a puzzle together. You know, you got to take an individual, take the athletic trainer on an individual basis and put them in a place in our system where they can really be successful, where they can make a difference. And you know, we're taking care of people's most valuable possessions, and that's their children. And that's the beauty of the job. So, you know, we need to understand the severity and the seriousness in what we do while helping each other grow and get better and really work at the, you know, it's corny, but I say, well, I use the phrase, we work at the craft of athletic training. You really got to master your craft. You really got to care about what you're doing. And I can't set a salary I can't pay you enough to make you care. You know, you just have to do that on your own. And if you don't care, you know, you really work your way out of the system pretty quickly.
So earlier y'all were talking about kind of driving traffic and the way it's kind of set up here in Pasadena. I don't know all the details, but Memorial Hermann essentially sponsors the school district and it makes a system to where we easily contact Bubba Wilson, which is our area representative that Brad was talking about. So he's not one that works in the schools, but he goes to a lot of schools and does all this stuff. And then anything we need, you know, the big banner that's behind Brad, Bubba got that for me. You know, somebody is going to the emergency room, call Bubba. He's going to call the ER or, you know, the Saturday morning clinics, you know, or, hey, Bubba, we got this injury. You think maybe you can come out, check it out, or something like that. And then also, you know, now I can call Dr. Crumby. I have his cell phone. I can, hey, can I come see this surgery and this? So for us, it's really streamlined the process to where, like, all right, I'm going to tell this kid, go to the doctor. Okay, well, they may go to the doctor down the street, down the other street. They may go to the doctor in the other side of the city. They may go to the doctor in Galveston. They may go to a chiropractor. They may go to their, you know, any sort of. But I'm like, look, this is an orthopedic surgeon. This is the guy we know, we call, we go, we send all of our kids to. And for us, it just makes it a lot easier. And I'm honestly glad, because before we had the Memorial Hermann deal, it was just a crapshoot as to where the kids were going to go. And I don't know that this is the best way to do it, but for us, I think it's far better than it was before we did the Memorial Hermann. And so I like the hospital partnering with the school thing.
Yeah.
So
I'm telling you, Jeremy, just from the outside looking in, the biggest factor in getting athletes back quickly and safely at the high school level is continuity of care. It's, you know, Brad being the athletic trainer, having direct access to the physician, to the physical therapist, to the surgeon, to whoever is treating that athlete, and having an open, direct line of communication with those folks. So you're all in the circle of care. You're all sharing information, and you're all doing what's best for the athlete. And it's difficult to do that. It makes it exponentially more difficult when kids are seeing six different orthopedic physicians at six different groups at four different hospitals, and they're going to seven different places to do therapy. It's difficult. So you bring it all under one umbrella, and that's our selling point to our parents in this area here. You know, if you decide to use our program and utilize our services that we offer, you can go from start to finish with your injury, and you never leave the Huntsville Hospital umbrella of services. And we have direct access to all of the information regarding your child's care, treatment, plan of return. And we can jump any hurdles a lot easier because we all have the same amount of information than we do if you go outside of our system. You're more than welcome to go wherever you want to go. But if you never leave our system, then that makes that exchange of information so much easier.
And I think Mike brought up a good point. And I think this is something that we all, I think as an athletic trainer, we learn, you know, there's a lot of entities to being a good healthcare provider. I think in sports medicine, and obviously my background in pro football, I'm probably a little skewed in what we use and or the availability. But I think one thing I learned, though, and I think this is something that we're looking at as a outreach program, and I think it's something that we're always trying to develop, and in conjunction with UT and Dr. Lowe and those people, we are trying to establish a good team physician base to put into these schools. And that's something that I really truly believe in, that if you're going to be a good team physician, you have to make yourself known to those kids. You can't just show up on Friday night and be seen for 2 hours and then you're not there again. I think it's important that those team physicians try to form a relationship with those schools that they're based at and they're working for. I love those athletes, or those physicians, to go into that school, maybe do an injury clinic one day a week or something, and just see those athletes and let those kids see them, know who they are, so they're not a stranger on game day and they're not somebody that they develop a confidence in that. They talk to the parents on a fairly regular basis, and they develop a rapport, and that helps drive that business back to them, and you get a continuity of care, and you know who's being taken care of. One of the things that always bothered me at any level that you're at is that, you know, if you lose track of those kids, they may go to somebody that's not maybe very good. And not that, you know, and I think from a standpoint, you develop a relationship with doctors and you know that they're good physicians and you know that they're going to take care of the kids in the right way, then you hate to have them go see somebody that you don't know or you're not sure that that's still going to be the case. And I think that's a big component of developing that relationship. And if you can get a team physician that works for you, that your kids know and your schools are aware of, your coaches know who they are, they can all call up and say, hey, doc, you know, we need you to run over and look at this. They're willing to do those things. That makes them a good, that's going to make them a much better team physician. And as any athletic trainer knows, if you got a good team physician that's in your, that you can depend on, that sure makes your job easier.
I agree. Like I said earlier, I think if you have the streamlined process, it just makes it a lot simpler. I had another question. Interviewing people, is there ever a chance for you guys to, instead of just coming and sitting down like you're sitting in front of me and I'm asking you questions and you're answering, is there ever a chance for you to go and work an event with them and interview them that way, kind of like just to see how they interact with people, see how they are, instead of just a... Because to me, it seems like if you could do that, if I could, when Bill decides to retire in, you know, 5 or 10 years, if I could say, okay, you know, you're going to come in and work a day with me, rather than, okay, yeah, off my 30-minute impression... Like, do you guys ever get that opportunity?
Well, listen, Bill, it sounds like he's trying to push you out the door. So whenever, you know, I mean, whenever the time comes, if you need a job, you don't hesitate to look towards North Alabama.
No, Jeremy, no, just preparing.
One of the things I do here, and it's different, it may be different for Brad in a bigger area, we don't take them out and let them work. It's hard to do that. I still call references, believe it or not. You know, I not many folks do that anymore, but I ask for at least 3 references from our athletic trainers, and I find out where they went to school. I call the program director there. I'm fairly active in our state association here. I'm the vice president for the Alabama Athletic Trainers Association, so I know a lot of the program directors for the programs in the state. Gotten to know some of the ones in the southeastern part of the United States, so I'll call the program director for some of the younger athletic trainers and just ask, hey, how's their work ethic? You know, what are they like? What are their weaknesses? What are they not very good at? And then the first round of interviews we do in my office, It'll be typically me and at least one of my senior staff members. And we just ask a lot of questions, you know, what are you good at? What are you going to bring to the table for us? What are you not good at? What do you want to do with your career? Where do you see yourself in 10 years? You know, where do you see athletic training in 10 years? How do you feel about working at a high school? How do you feel about working at a middle school? How do you feel about working with kids that are on Medicaid, you know, that are going to be, there are a lot more struggles and hurdles to get those kids into the doctor. How about that? Is that something that, you know, that you're hands off about? How do you feel about doing rehabs and morning treatments at the schools? And we ask a lot of those questions and we just kind of conversate in my office. And if we feel like they're a good fit and we move to what I call round two, the second round is I take them to the school. I take them wherever they're going to be every day. And I want them to meet some of the key players at the school, the principal, the AD, some of the easier coaches to get along with and some of the more difficult coaches to get along with. I want them to, you know, and I've thrown some of our interviewees to the wolves and gone in with a football coach that can be a struggle to get along with and say, coach, they're yours. I'll be back in 10 minutes and I'll leave. You know, let the coach have, you know, ask what there are things coaches will ask when I'm not around that they don't always ask when I'm there. And, you know, they've typically, the folks we've interviewed have told me and that we've hired have told me what coaches ask. And it's nothing that I haven't expected. You know, I don't ever just hire somebody. I wouldn't do a Skype interview and then hire you for a job and bring you in and then throw you out of the school. I don't think that's fair to you. It's not fair to the school. And it's definitely not fair to you as an athletic trainer. My goal as the administrator is to put you, when we hire you, to put you in a position to be successful. I want to put you somewhere where you can grow as an athletic trainer and advance your skills professionally and hopefully obtain whatever your professional goals are. So it's, you know, it may be a different setup there at Memorial Hermann, but that's just kind of how we do it here.
Yeah. Again, I'm so new in this. It's that process is a little bit new for me, but you know, something I think that you always have to understand. I think being in the business long as I've had to interview and hire different people for different positions and so on and so forth. I think something you have to really look at is, in all honesty, hiring is a little bit of a crapshoot. You know, they can tell you some things and they can answer all the right questions, but when you get them in a position, you know, you learn something a little different about them. And that's kind of goes what you said. Mm-hmm. You know, it'd sure be nice to see somebody in a position where they're working and see how they operate. The problem with that is you don't have that luxury to do that very often, unless you know the person that you're hiring. I've always said, you know, if you're going to hire somebody, if you know them and know how they handle situations. I had a very unique, you know, when we relocated from Nashville or from Houston to Tennessee, when I was head trainer, one of my job responsibility was really to go in and try to find who I felt would be our best team physician. So I try to get creative and you try to say, you know, what can you do or who can you talk to that's going to really give you an idea how this person operates. So you have to look at kind of that background and say, okay, now who's going to give me an opinion? You know, and as you say, if you're looking at a young athletic trainer, curriculum directors, and you're, you know, supervising athletic trainer, but, you know, let's be realistic about that sometimes is, you know, they want to get their kids placed and they want to get their kids in positions. So they may not be, and I'm not going to say totally truthful, but they may not know exactly, you know, or feel like this isn't my best student, but, you know, I think he's going to be okay. And you know, 2 or 3 years as he learns, he's going to get to be a pretty good athletic trainer. And that's very possible going to be what it is. But I think what you look at and something I did is, you know, when I was in that position, I said, you know, who knows these doctors probably as good as anybody? And, you know, you say, well, I can call his office manager, but the office manager is going to, you know, he's going to butter up the doctor and try to be. So you know who I called? I called the OR nurse at the hospital that I knew these doctors worked at. And I called the OR nurse, or the head of OR, and I said, if you tell me who of your doctors is the best doctor, who's the best sports medicine guy, who has the best results, who has the best demeanor in surgery, who can handle situations, crazy things come up. So I think you have to be a little innovative when you're doing an interview, or, you know, if you're looking at, and I do think you have to look at references, and you have to look who they work for. And you know what? Another big thing that I look at is when you're looking at a new hire is, what's their history? What have they done in the past? What's their, you know, have they stayed at a job for 6 months and moved on? Because I always say, you know, I always worry about somebody that's always moving because there's a reason. And maybe I'm wrong. Maybe it's just not the right fit. Maybe, you know, it just wasn't the right position. But if it happens over and over and over again, and I was in one of these situations, you know, when I looked back at the at his history, he'd kind of been there and done that. And I thought, you know, we all think we can salvage somebody, but it doesn't usually happen. There's a reason for that movement, and they're not either unhappy, or I think part of it is they may really not know what they want to do. And they think this is it, but it's, you know, it just doesn't fit. So I think the hiring practices, you know, you say, how do you hire? Well, I think it is a tough position to be in. And, you know, you think you really did your due diligence sometimes, and everything you did looked good. The person looks great on paper. The interview went great. You see them for 6 months and you say, wow, this just isn't working for whatever reason. And then you have to reevaluate. But I think in our situation, and probably Mike's the same way, I think the nice part about that is, you know, every school's not the same and every athletic training situation is not the same. And if you have a little luxury to move some people, you know, that person may not be a perfect fit for one school, but they may fit in another school that works out much better for them. And so I don't think you necessarily give up on people. You just have to kind of find that right fit and what their strengths and weaknesses are and where they're going to fit in better than maybe someplace else.
All right. That'll work. That's the thing I'm kind of worried about, because Bill and I work pretty well together. You know, we kind of have worked not assignments, but, you know, he's really good at scheduling. I'm really bad at scheduling. I can't, you know, I do a lot of good stuff with the kids, like a lot of creative stuff with the kids. Well, he creates the schedule. He drives a lot of the ideas that I have.
Yeah.
And so we work well together. And, you know, when he does retire, I think I'm going to lose a lot. And so it's like, well, I really want to make sure I'm prepared to fill that gap whenever it's time. And, you know, getting somebody new, somebody that's green is going to be tough. But then at the same time, I'm like, well, then they'll have a lot of passion and energy. And so I'm just trying to prepare myself as well as I can. Again, you know, and sometime in the next 10 years, he's said he's probably going to retire. So it's not like I'm pushing him out the door, but this is something he said.
And that's Bill, isn't that Randy's job to find that guy?
No, I don't, because whenever I hired here, I never met Bill on first day of practice. And so that's just the way it was. So,
but when Bill retires in 6 months, you'll be looking for somebody else.
Right.
Oh, no. 6 years.
It's, you know, it's hard. It really is. And like, I think Brad used the word I was going to use. It's a crapshoot. It really is. You know, you go to convention and you put your job description up and what you're looking for. And we've been challenged with interns and GAs the same way. You know, there's a lot more turnover with those positions than there are with our full-time staff positions. And, you know, you go and you interview and you talk to them and it sounds great on paper. And there's some you think that will fit in wonderfully. And then they get here and they're just not the right fit. They just, you know, and it's not necessarily anybody's fault. They're just not the right fit. And then sometimes they get here and they decide they hate it and they leave, and, you know, you're hung out to dry as the administrator because you got to go find somebody, and you got to find somebody good in the middle of October. And, you know, most athletic trainers worth their salt are employed in the middle of October. So, you know, it's difficult. That is a challenge. That is where, you know, being the administrator for a program, and Brad's history, I'm sure, comes in handy. He knows a lot of people. And you know, I don't know that I know a lot of people, but I've got through the state association, I've got enough connections where I can call on a pinch and say, hey, do you know anybody that's looking for a job? Do you know anybody good that's looking for a job? And we've gotten a couple of leads that way. And truth be told, Brad, honestly, you said this a minute ago, most of the program directors, at least in this state, that I talk to, they're pretty honest. You know, I've had some that I've called and say, hey, can you tell me about this person? And they'll say, yeah, they're not very good. Right. You know, and they know they don't, you know, if they're not good and they're not going to work out, they don't want them to get a job necessarily in the state because it might hurt their enrollment. You know, and I tell them, listen, you know, if they're a project, sometimes you can take on an individual that's a project, somebody that needs some mentoring, some help. That's why you ask questions, Jeremy, about what's their weakness. You know, what are they not good at? You know, nothing wrong with hiring somebody that's not very good at something. Nothing wrong with hiring somebody, especially younger folks. You know, you're not going to be good at everything. You're not going to know everything. And that's okay. I don't know everything. You know, I'm almost 35 and I don't know. I find out every day. I know less than I think I do. So, you know, that's where finding a good mix and You know, that's part of the reason I bring a staff member in with me to interview. There may be something I miss, something an interviewee will say that I may not catch or pick up on, and I may not think it's a big deal, but they do. You know, they may say, well, you know, they said this, and do you really think that's going to work at that school? You know, I don't know. Maybe we need to call them and ask them some questions and have them expand on that a little bit.
You know, I think another thing that I think that we have to kind of all keep in mind, and Bill and Randy may jump into this too, and I'm not, you know, I've been in the athletic training business long time, and I when I went to school, we were on an internship there wasn't a curriculum.
Right.
We were mentors, or we worked under an athletic trainer. We put in hours. We had to have 1,800 clock hours before we could even sit for the exam. It was a whole different setup, and I'm not, by no means am I knocking the NATA program, and I think that what you see is it's much more evidence-based, it's much more curriculum-based, it's much more, you're seeing these young athletic trainers that are coming out of school with a lot of knowledge, but I think that part of their probably, where we sacrificed a little bit of it was some of their practical skills and actual training room setting skills, where they have to deal with coaches and they have to deal with administration and they have to deal with some of the issues that you see on a day-to-day basis being in an athletic training room. So I think from a hiring standpoint, it's probably important for us to understand, especially with these young athletic trainers. And as you will find out, you know, as you go into it, and Bill probably thought the same thing of you when he brought you in, you know, you're going to have to kind of learn some of those things and figure some of that out, because you haven't had that experience. You've never been in a position where you had to do those things. And I think that's, from our standpoint, as far as those people that are hiring those people, I think we have to kind of look at those situations and say, okay, how can we help them get that experience? And don't just give up on them immediately. I think you have to say, okay, let's work you through this and see how this is going to be. And I don't think it's, you know, I would certainly hope from an administrative standpoint that you wouldn't have somebody for 6 months and say, oh, this just doesn't work. Let's go in and try to figure out why it doesn't work and where we can help you. And I think that's where the mentoring side of it, I think that's where Mike, you know, says he tries to have some other people and kind of work together. And as you guys know, and I think Randy and you guys all know the same thing. I mean, we've all been in those positions and we know, you know, some of those things, you look at them and say, oh God, this kid came in, it was terrible. But 5 years from now, he may be a great young athletic trainer. And 15, 20 years from now, he may be, you know, one of the top kids and top athletic trainers in the state and done very well. And I mean, it's a maturing process. And I think that from an administrative side of it, we can't give up on those kids just because we feel like they don't know. Because I think part of those, you know, those first 4 or 5 years, they're out in the real world. I say the real world. You find out a lot of things that you didn't learn in school, a lot of things that you didn't have, you know, access to. And you say, wait a minute, I always say, you know, that evidence-based, we can look at a lot of evidence-based stuff, but you know what? Some of my experiences show me the evidence-based stuff may be really good, but it isn't always the answer. You know, you have to kind of keep your eyes open and look at a lot of different things, and I think experience is a big part of that. And you guys can chime in on that. I mean, you've had the same thing at every level.
Yeah, one of the things I told a staff member, one of our kind of newer, unexperienced staff members last year was, I think it's a Mike Tyson quote, you know, everybody's got a plan until they get punched in the mouth, you know, and that happens at schools. You know, there's you deal with injuries the textbook way until a parent shows up at school and yells and screams and hollers at you because, you know, they don't feel like you're doing everything you can to help their child. And most of that stuff is miscommunication, but it's, you have to keep your cool and be a professional, and there's no evidence-based medicine for angry parents. You know, it doesn't exist. You know, it's the field is always changing. It's always a new challenge. And I am very much on board with what Brad said. You can't, you can't go into an interview process and look at somebody's lack of experience and say, well, you know, they're no good. Let's kick them out. You know, what kind of opportunities have they had? Where have they been? And maybe they need a chance. I took a chance on a guy that actually left and took a job somewhere else late this summer. And when I hired him, he was a great guy, really smart, struggled to pass the exam. And because he couldn't pass the certification exam, he took a job doing something else. And he passed his exam and looked for an athletic training job for over a year and just couldn't find one. Nobody would pull the trigger and hire him. And I interviewed him, and I thought he was great. I thought he'd be a really good fit for that school. We took a chance, hired him. And man, he was phenomenal. You know, really came into a school that we had struggled and had some poor relationships with some of those coaches when we hired that guy. And he turned it around, man. That school's a really big fan of ours now because of the work of a guy that really struggled to find a job. And you have people who have fantastic resumes, and you bring them in the office, and you think, well, that guy's kind of a jerk, you know. And you see both sides of the coin really when you're in a position like me or Brad when you do this. And I don't like the fact that we've, you know, hired and parted ways with some folks here since I've been here. It's, you know, I tell our staff every August, I hope all of you stay here until you retire because I'm tired of doing interviews. It's taxing. It really is. It's challenging and it's hard and it's a heavy decision. And if you pick the wrong person, you're gonna pay for it. So you know, that's something. When I saw the agenda today, Jeremy, that was something I kind of focused on. That's a challenge for an administrator for an outreach program, hiring, interviewing. It's a big challenge.
So I know we talked to Luke Wilbanks. He's the owner of the local Chick-fil-A, and obviously they do a pretty good job of hiring and you know, mm-hmm. treating their employees well. And so I've gotten some good tips for him on how to interview, and we actually did one here with the students, and that was a really cool experience for me. So I'm working. I think hopefully by the time he retires in another, you know, 5 or 10 years, I'll have an interview down. So all right, so we're gonna move forward a little bit.
Hey, let's just hope when I do retire, they allow you in the process.
Oh well, yeah. So again, that may be another thing as I have to work on is making sure that I'm the first person to do the interview. If they don't make it past me, they don't make it at all. So that's what I'll have to work on. But all right, so Mike, some tips for running an outreach service. So maybe like your, I don't know, two best tips for running an outreach service.
Two best tips for running. You know, the employees, you know, our staff here has to know how much I care. You know, I've got a little sign hanging up in my office right behind my desk where only I can see it. And it holds true. People don't care about how much you know until they know how much you care. You have to talk to the staff and be respectful to our staff and be empathetic to what's going on in their lives. Burnout is something I'm very aware of for our staff. And I encourage them to take time away, get away from their school, turn their phone off, step out of the athletic realm, go do something they enjoy, find a hobby, play golf, you know, read a book, whatever. But get away from athletic training when you can, because it's a grind. You know, right now is a difficult time in the season. You know, we're transitioning here away from football into the winter sports, wrestling, men's and women's basketball. You know, running the outreach program is a people business, and the guys have got to know how much I care, and it's my job to try to take care of them and put them in a position to be successful.
I think, you know, if there's a key, and again, I'm learning these keys as I go, but I think you got to be, yourself if you're the director. I think you're right exactly. You know, you got to be who you are and treat your people right. I don't think it really matters what position you're in. You got to treat people, as I always say, you treat people like you want to be treated. And it doesn't matter from your staff, but I also think that it's so critical that you treat your clientele that same way. I think we are a service provider. We are our business depends on us taking care of people. And part of taking care of people is doing it the right way. I think the medical business as a whole, there's a lot of things that are happening in medicine right now. Electronic media is one, medical records is one. You see a lot of things happening. I have an elderly mother that has had to go see some doctors. You know, it's really irritating as a person to go into a doctor's office and the doctor sits and looks at his computer and types notes into the computer, never deals with a patient. In other words, your eye-to-eye contact with that patient is very minimal. That's wrong. We've gone the wrong direction here. And I think that part of medicine is created that in its own right. But we got to remember, we are a caregiver. We're talking to these kids. They don't understand. We know this information. They don't know this information. Their parents don't know this information. So it's our job to make sure they're informed of what they're getting into and what this is all about. And I think a big part of our business from an athletic trainer and selling it is making sure that we do that in a respectful manner, but try to do it in an informed manner where we're really helping them understand what they've got going. And you know, if the doctor's role is to look at them, and then our role maybe come back and explain it a little better. If we know what the doctor said to them. I always think it was important if I had a doctor seeing one of our athletes or patients, I think it was important to maybe see what was going on and try to be in the room, because if that kid had a question that he was afraid to ask the doctor or parent didn't know, I think that, you know, you might be able to answer those questions for him. So I think a big part of our business, as in any athlete training business, is kind of being that in-between person and dealing with those situations that you can help the patient athlete understand what's going on and how, you know. So I think we always have to remember we're in the care business, and we have to care for people and treat people with respect and try to do the things that we do. It's funny you asked a question. We are fortunate down here. We drive pickup trucks with Memorial Hermann on the side. Well, in Houston traffic sometimes, you know, you really, it's one of those things where you're driving down the road and somebody cuts you off and you really want to, you know, do something you really shouldn't do. And then you think about it, well, wait a minute, my phone number's on the side of this truck. I better be careful how I respond to this. But I think that's kind of the way you have to approach this job, is you always have to think that, hey, you know, we're under the limelight, and we're, you know, our job is to represent the hospital or the group that we're representing, but it's to take care of your people.
I think one of the things I learned probably about 2 years ago from Dr. Barry Weiss, he's at the Texas Chiropractic College, but he said, make sure your patients understand what the next step is. So from that point, I really began to, like, I'll say, all right, so this is what our plan is over the next few days. Here's a piece of paper saying what the plan is. Now you tell me, you know, you repeat the plan to me. So, okay, yes, I understand. We're going to ice it, and we're going to work on motion, and then we're going to work on stretching, and then we're going to work on this. And just like you're saying, you know, letting them know you care, but making sure you're using words and things that they understand, so breaking it down for them. I think that's really changed the way I do this, because then the kids don't just be like, I don't know, he just said to do this. Well, no, look, this is what we're going for. This is what our goal is. You know, our goal is for you to be able to run for 5 minutes without pain, and then we're going to go to 10, and then we're going to go to 20, and then we're going to begin sprinting and cutting and all this stuff. And, you know, that way they know, okay, I have an idea of what we're going to be doing next. I have an idea of where we're going. And because they know I care, they know I'm intentional, and they understand the words I'm using. I completely agree with what you guys are saying. So awesome. All right. So for scheduling, I know you talked to Mike about having to schedule people on Saturdays and that being a pain. And you're always getting hit up for, at least here, we're always getting emails saying, you know, this club sport or this event needs some athletic trainers for coverage. Mike, what are some of the things, same that tips or things that you really look for or try to do when you're scheduling athletic trainers to cover events?
No, I mean, number one, you know, you hate to ask the question, but you kind of have to ask, is it necessary? You know, we've had, for example, we've had some youth gymnastics, youth basketball groups that have asked us before, and you're talking about athletes that are 8 and under at some of those times that are participating, and they'll want an athletic trainer there for the whole day. You know, I mean, does an 8-year-old basketball player really need an athletic trainer sitting in the gym? Probably not. You know, we can probably get by with a point of contact for the parents on that. Not that we want to shorthand those athletes or that group or the parents or any of that, but you have to make the best decision for your staff, you know, and in delivering that service. And then secondly, you know, we get hit up frequently for the same weekend. It was probably 4 or 5 weekends ago here. We had one of our club soccer organizations had a big tournament, 3 different locations, about 12 different fields at once, Friday night, all day Saturday, all day Sunday. The Huntsville Sports Commission had a high school softball showcase at the city fields. It was 3 different fields, all day Saturday, all day Sunday. We had high school lacrosse Saturday afternoon and then Sunday afternoon. In addition to covering everything that was going on at our high schools that weekend. So we agreed to cover it all, and you kind of have to tell the staff a month in advance, hey, look, all hands on deck that weekend. We're going to need every warm body we can get. And you go and you do it, you schedule it out, you do it. You know it's not fun, but something I've rule of thumb I've always tried to take since I've been the manager is I'm still certified and licensed. I get out and I cover some of that stuff. You know, I don't want the staff to think that I'm sitting in the office Monday through Friday not doing anything and that I'm going to point and say, hey, you need to go work over there when I'm not willing to do it myself. So get out. You know, I get out and I work and I cover. And I enjoy it. You know, I really do. I enjoy it more now than I did when I was in the field. You know, I miss it. I miss Friday nights a lot of times. I miss being in the locker rooms with coaches and athletes. So, you know, scheduling is something you take serious, and it's you're shorthanding people on their free time. You know, I don't ever take that lightly. So it's something that's it's difficult, but it's a job that's got to be done.
Well, I think, you know, I agree with that. I think what you, and there again, I think you have to, I think that's part of our job as the managers or looking over these groups is we really have to kind of decide what our utilization of our people is and where we can best utilize those people. And I think that's important for us from a standpoint of care is that we don't overextend ourselves to the point where we can't give them a care. And I right. think that's part of it. I mean, and that's where I see staffing and everything else. And I think it's easy to push and say, well, we'll take anything. But, you know, I think there comes a point in time where you have to say, wait a minute, we got to really look at our staff. And as I said, I think the business model is such that, you know, there's so many things out there today that, you know, a lot of things present to us. We don't necessarily have to go out and look for business because there's a lot of people coming to us just because we have the service. And they want coverage. But, you know, sometimes you have to decide, you know, is this worth it to us? And, you know, as a business model, and you always hate to say from a business standpoint, but sometimes it's not worth it. Sometimes when you get into it from a healthcare standpoint, and Mike and I are probably in the same boat, is, you know, when we're making these decisions, sometimes there's a money issue involved. And is this something that's going to drive some business back to the hospital, or it really isn't? And, you know, if it's not going to really drive anything back to us, other than the community service, and that's where you have to weigh the importance of that part of it. Is it something that we can help the community with, and it's going to help us down the road? It's going to sell the hospital system down the road. It's going to benefit us there, or is there something that's really not going to benefit us very much at all? And, you know, the sad part of it is sometimes you have to make those decisions and say, you know, really, I don't feel like this is going to really help us very much from a business standpoint. And, you know, you hate to turn people down, but at the same time, we don't want to give a bad, you know, we don't want to, as you said, you know, staffing is such an issue. I think athletic training as a whole is we work crazy hours and we work a lot of hours. And I've always said, you know, if there's a time when you can give people time off, then that's important. You got to, because they are going to have to work certain hours. So, you know, I think that you have to be careful with your staffing and what positions you put them in and how many hours that they're working. And sometimes you just have to say no.
That'll work. All right. This is a tough part right here. Tough part of the interview. Tell me about a time that as a manager of other athletic trainers that you failed, and then how that has helped you grow. So, Brad, you got anything to start off with?
Oh, I could. There's a whole laundry list of things. I think that a lot of it's just experience. You know, I think every day you kind of have challenges. I think probably one of the things athletic trainers kind of figure out over a period of time is we become micromanagers, I shouldn't say micro. We're very versatile in what we do. We do a lot of different things, and we are multitaskers, I guess, in a sense. So I think sometimes we sit back and you know, when things start going and we deal with issues all day long. I know as a head trainer, I was always dealing with issues. And at the end of the day, you sit back and say, well, God, did I get anything done today that I was supposed to get done? And you say, well, not really, but I put out a lot of fires. And, you know, when you sit down and write it all down and say, well, what did I do? Well, when you start figuring out all the little things that you put together and you put out fires and you did this and that, you did that, you had a full day, but you don't, you know, you may not think that you did. I think part of, you know, I think that it's always a learning curve. You gotta always look at every situation that goes wrong and say, what happened here? You know, I think a lot of times you have to keep things in perspective. You know, I know coming from my background, you know, it was so common. And one of the big things that you'd get, and I think all of us have been in the same situation, you may have two or three kids that have the same injury, or you may have four kids that tore their ACL in one season. And the first question everybody asks is, well, why? We must have done something different, or you guys did something different. Why'd they tear their ACL? And my answer to that sometimes is, let's look at it, but the problem is, or the answer probably is, just bad luck. And sometimes bad luck is, you know, your worst enemy. So I think you have to kind of look at things, and you can't be so naive to say that, you know, maybe there isn't an issue here at hand, so let's look at it. But at the same time, you also have to kind of keep in mind that it may have just been some bad luck, and, you know, you might do exactly the same thing next year and have no ACLs. So I think that, you know, you have to kind of keep things in perspective, and, you know, you're going to have some bad days, and you're going to have some good days, and you're going to have some really good turnouts, and, you know, sometimes the turnout's not going to be as good, and you have to kind of, I always try to say you have to try to keep on an even keel and work kind of on that basis.
Yeah, you can't get too high. You can't get too low. But, I mean, if you're asking Jeremy specifics when I've failed, you know, I try to make sure that I'm working as hard as our hardest working staff member. I don't want anybody else to be working harder than me. And you know, where the things that really bother me that stick with me are instances where we've had to part ways with an employee. You know, when you have to let somebody go or end their employment, whether it's amicable or not, that's been the hardest things, you know, and we've done that a handful of times in the last 3.5 years I have. And sometimes it's my decision, you know, and my boss and human resources will tell me, hey, it's your call. You do what you want to do. And that's hard, you know, when you make that decision to do that, to end somebody's employment, you're affecting them, you're affecting their family, you know, their loved ones, their situation. Sometimes they have to move to find another job. That's heavy, you know, that's the only way I know how to describe that. That's, you know, that's life, but it's heavy. And then in some of those cases, you know, when I took the administrative job here, I decided that I was going to run the program a certain way, and that we were going to have certain standards that I was not going to be negotiable on. We really improved our documentation when I took over. We document everything. We really hammer people on paperwork here, because I want to know what you're doing. I want to make sure you're up to snuff and treat yourself like a medical professional. And in a couple of those cases where we parted ways with employees, it was simply because they didn't buy into the way I wanted to do things. And you know, I question still for some of those people. It's been a couple of years. And I ask, you know, did I do everything I could do to get them to buy into the way I wanted to do things? You know, that's hard. So you ask, how does that help you? Well, you know, you try to make sure it doesn't happen again. You know, when you bring new people in, when we brought new people in, we make sure and tell them what the standard is, what the expectation is, and we're very clear about it. So there's no guesswork. Here's the level that we expect. And if you can't perform to that level, then we will help you get there. So that's been the hardest thing. You know, that's kind of where you feel like you've let folks down, at least for me anyway.
All right. I know, Mike, you mentioned how you missed the Friday Night Lights and those kind of things.
Yeah.
Brad, do you miss being in the athletic training room with the NFL, the relationships you built there and the daily interactions with the patients or athletes?
I think that's probably the biggest thing I miss. I think the socialization as an athletic trainer is, you know, you spend time with your athletes, whether young kids or professional sports, you know, whatever it is. I think that time in the training room was just a fun time. You could joke around a little bit. And I've always had, you know, very easygoing demeanor. And I think it's hard to sit somebody in an office and just say, okay, this is where you are for 8 hours today. You're going to sit in this office and look at this computer and work off the phone. And we're people, you know, as naturally, I think, that get out and do things. I was always a hands-on athletic trainer. So, yeah, to me, that's probably one of the tougher things to do is to be out of that environment. And that's probably one of the things I really do miss. You know, so it is a little different from that standpoint. And that doesn't make it good or bad. It just, you know, it's a little different environment for you. I think, you know, Mike was right. I think it's fun to, you know, as an athletic trainer, I like to get out. And when I interviewed for this job and talked to the guy that was in it before, he said, you know, one of the things I did was try to make sure I would cover certain things just because it's you want to get out and do things. I got to cover a high school football game the other night. And, you know, it was like I was excited. I got to go cover a football game again. And, you know, I hadn't done it in 7 months. And, you know, it's like, wow, this is going to be, and I enjoyed it. I mean, it's just because that's what we do. And I think those are the things that you enjoy. And so, yeah, I agree. And one thing I'm going to say that I probably, you know, the thing that I have backed off a little bit is I'm not going to say that I work more hours than any of my other staff, because I'm on the other side of that. And now I'm trying to slow down a little bit. You know, it's easy for me. But I think it's important that your staff knows that you're there for them. And if they need you to help, that you're willing to step up and help. And I think that's, you know, so I'm not going to necessarily say that I work more hours than anybody else on my staff, because I know that that's not the case. But I do think it's important, you know, and I've told all my staff that if there's ever a time that you need some help, don't be afraid to call me and ask me, because I'm very well, you know, if I got the time and I can do it, work it into my schedule, I'm more than happy to be an, you know, step out there and do it for you. And I think that's part of our job as a manager of this is to, we have to support our people and we have to go out. You know, if there's something we need to do, we got to be willing to do that and help those people out.
All right. Randy is the stadium or district athletic trainer. And so, you know, he worked in the, how long did you work in high schools, Randy?
24 years.
24 years. And this is your third year?
Fourth year.
Fourth year. And so kind of the same question. You really do a lot of administrative work. Talk about your experience and your kind of answer to that question.
Like the difference in what I did before and
yeah, just,
and now?
Just the aspect, I mean, how do you, the relationships, was that a big part of it for you, or is that something that you miss and would potentially go back?
Like Brad says, I mean, the interaction with the kids in the training room, all those different personalities, there's always something going on. It's just, I miss that a lot. And, you know, if you look at my Facebook friends, I've got kids that graduated 10, 15, 20 years ago, athletes, former students, student trainers. I mean, those probably half my Facebook friends are those people. So you build strong relationships with them, especially back in my first job, I was the only athletic trainer. So for a lot of those kids, I went to school at that particular school. I was the only athletic trainer they knew for 4 whole years, you know, so I was it.
Yeah.
Like when they think of athletic trainer, I'm the one doctor, right? Coach Dugas or whatever. That's all they know. So
yeah, you kind of get to the point when you're out of the field, you feel like a lion at the zoo. You know, you've been taken out of the wild, and you're just kind of, you get fed every day, and you know, you go out to cover a game on Friday night, Brad, and you start to wonder, you know, do I remember how to do this? You know, you know, it's like riding a bike. You know, you don't ever really forget, but. You know, when I go cover things, I kind of run through the EAPs in my head thinking, all right, you know, do I remember what I'm supposed to be doing if something bad happens? And, you know, it's good for me. That's part of the reason I cover it in addition to what it does for the staff. It, you know, it keeps my skills sharp and keeps me from wasting away into just an administrative pile of what used to be an athletic trainer.
Yep, that works. Yeah, just the other day, you know, I noticed that, Mike, you said you work harder, and then Brad was saying he doesn't want to work more hours. And so you know, essentially you didn't say I'm going to work more hours. You just said you don't want to be outworked, you know, or be seen as lazy.
Yeah.
And so that's what
you know,
saying.
And I, the phrase I use around here a lot of times with our staff is perception is reality. You know, if you're standing on the sideline, we had a staff member a few years ago who went to a tournament in a different part of the state and walked in and snapped a picture on their cell phone of the host athletic trainer. And the host athletic trainer is sitting in a chair next to the bleachers, got his feet propped up on the bleachers, and has his head down with a pair of headphones in watching his iPad, you know. And I took that teaching moment and used that for our staff and said, does it look like this guy cares? And they said no. And I said, so if a parent walks into the gym and sees that, the perception is that that guy's a poor athletic trainer. You know, and he may be the best athletic trainer in the state, but for that moment, he looks like he doesn't care. And I don't ever want our staff here to catch me in those types of moments. You know, do I need downtime? Yeah. Do I need to step away? Yeah. You know, is it important for me to get time with my family? Absolutely. But it's just as important for them, and I want them to know that I recognize and I realize that, and I try to make sure that happens.
Yep. So when you're on the job, be on the job, and when you're at home, be at home.
Right.
So. Well, I think you can't ever lose it. You got to be a professional, and you got to treat your job professionally. And
right.
You know, if there's and I totally agree there. I think if there's one thing that what irritates me probably as an older athletic trainer is sometimes when we look at, you know, a situation and the way it was handled, and it just doesn't really come up to snuff. You don't feel like it was handled right. You want to look at it and say, why wasn't this handled right? You know, and as an athletic trainer, I think it's kind of insulting to us sometimes if there's, you know, if it's treated poorly, not that you necessarily made a bad decision, but if you just didn't care or just didn't, you know, treat the kid, the athlete right. And, you know, if a young man sprains or a young lady sprains her ankle and, you know, their ankle's swollen and you just say, okay, we'll see you tomorrow. Well, I mean, should you have taken time to explain how they need to ice and taken the time to put a compression sleeve or wrap on there and done the right thing? In other words, you'd be an athletic trainer. And if you don't do that, I think it gives us all a black eye. So I totally agree with that. I think when you're on the job, you got to do your job and you got to be seen doing your job and people understand what our job is all about. And if you take the attitude, well, it doesn't matter, well, then that's you're in the wrong profession, I think. I mean, I think you have to do if you're going to do it, you got to do it right.
Right.
Okay, well, that more or less wraps up all the questions, all the topics that I want to hit. If you guys got any parting thoughts on, you know, running an outreach athletic trainer program or managing athletic trainers, and, you know, this would be a great time to fill that in. If not, I'll close it out.
Yeah, I don't have any real words of wisdom. You know, I feel like Brad could probably pass some on to me. you know, I'm learning every day, you know, and there's something we say around here, you know, we've got some marketing folks that we work with that are really helping us figure out what our marketing goal is for our program. And we have really supportive administrators here. there, but we say this phrase all the time. There's no handbook for this. You know, we're really kind of all of us that are doing this outreach program administration. We're really kind of cutting a path and leaving, you know, a trail for others to follow us. There's you know, this is new ground for a lot of us. So we're kind of learning as we go. At least I feel like I am. You know, it's a fun job. It's a great job. I love it. But you know, I learn something new every single day.
I think we find ourselves in a very unique situation with outreach athletic training. And, you know, part of it is, you know, when you get into the healthcare industry and the medical business and so on and so forth, and, you know, it's a fee for service, basically. It's a business where, you know, all the rest of the things that you do in a hospital setting or a medical setting is you're taking insurance and you're doing, you know, even a physical therapy clinic, you know, everything that you do is a charged expense. I think we're in a very unique environment. Many of the things we do is not a fee. It's a free service. It's a community service, or athletic trainers don't charge for many things they do. I always look back and say, God, if I could get paid for every ultrasound I did for 30 years, I mean, I'd be a rich person for that. But you know, we bring a very unique quality to the profession and to the business, and so it's a little bit, you know, I think that what we find in this, we're trying to kind of blend that athletic training business into a hospital setting. And those aren't necessarily conducive in the sense of how fees and operation is concerned. You know, a lot of times everything that is based off, and I shouldn't say everything because I don't think it's everything, but I think that you just see the model is different. Mm-hmm. So what we have, I think, from an outreach standpoint, is trying to blend that in, and where can we best utilize those services to help drive that business back into the hospital. So from our standpoint, as far as an outreach director or pushing business, I think that we try to, you know, what you're trying to do is just make it available and get kids into your system, whether that's a free service or not, that in time, if something needs to be done, then you're kind of opening that door back into the hospital system. And I think that's our uniqueness, is that we're trying to drive the business, but at the same time, we're offering a lot of things at really a very inexpensive charge, at least our services, and how can we do that and still work it back into the hospital system.
All right, that'll work. So just kind of to sum up some of the things that we talked about here. So you're definitely looking for people that can sell who you are to the community. So you're not flipping people off on the road when you're driving your Memorial Hermann truck or, you know, sleeping with your iPad. But something that fits that specific spot, knowing that they may be a great athletic trainer, but they don't speak Spanish in a school where everybody speaks Spanish, or, you know, they don't fit that, what you need for that thing. Definitely communicating with the parents and communicating with the community to present a good face for all of us. And then some of the tips for the athletic training coverage, you know, you got to ask, is it necessary, and does it bring business for you guys as an outreach athletic training? You know, because it really is about driving the business to the hospital, because essentially that's where you're getting paid from. So just some of the things to consider with outreach athletic training. Again, lots of good experience, 10 years of experience from Mike Stevenson, and then lots of athletic training and leading experience from Brad Brown here. So I'm going to go ahead and close it out, guys, and then I'll say goodbye. So Brad and Mike, thanks for being here. Thanks for joining us. And Brad, thanks for what you guys are doing here as part of our sports and medicine team against Streamline, and being willing to come over here, step up, and help wherever is needed here. GHATS, the Greater Houston Athletic Trainer Society, is the one that sponsors the CEUs. So if you're listening to this and you decide you need some CEUs, then catch it live during lunch break. Usually it's 11 to 12:30 Central Standard Time. So usually it's 11 to 12:30 Central Standard Time, but today was a little bit later. But all that information is usually on our website at sportsmedicinebroadcast.com, where you can watch live almost every single Wednesday, except for, I don't know, because we're about to have a baby. My wife might be calling me here in the next few minutes. You never know. And then I'll be gone for a little while. So if you want to join the conversation, there's links to there. If you register, there's a place where you can join the conversation. You can use hashtag TheSMB on Twitter, or you can tweet directly to me, PHS Sports Med. Google Plus is Sports Medicine Broadcast. Facebook.com/PHS Athletic Training. So for Jeremy, Michael Stevenson from Huntsville Hospital System in Huntsville, Alabama, Brad Brown from Memorial Hermann here in Houston, Bill Hale, and Randy Dugas, and that's a wrap.